Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You are listening to NPR News. I'm Angela Davis. Glad to have you join us. Today, we're talking with Gwen Westerman, our new Minnesota Poet Laureate. Gwen works with fabric as well as words. She is a quilter as well as a poet. She's an essayist and a historian. Her creative work reflects the language and history of her native roots. Gwen lives down in southern Minnesota on the land of her Dakota ancestors, and she's a professor there in the English department at Minnesota State University in Mankato. Now, she's also an enrolled member of the Sisseton Wahpeton Dakota Oyate through her father, and she's a citizen of the Cherokee Nation through her mother. She's Minnesota's third poet laureate and the first Native person to hold the position. The phone lines are open this hour. We want to hear from you, too, as we talk with Gwen. Are you a poet? A quilter, a knitter, a painter? How does your heritage factor into your work? And what would you like to ask our new poet laureate here in Minnesota? To call us, just call 651-227-6000. Again, 651-227-6000. You can also call 800-242-2828. Tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Gwen, I'm so glad you could join me today. First of all, congratulations.
Good morning.
Hi. Well, first of all, congratulations on receiving this honor.
Thank you so much. It's exciting and overwhelming.
I'm sure. Yeah. So what do you hope to do with this new role?
I hope to help shine more light on the poets and the wannabe poets in the state of Minnesota. I see this as a job as a working poet, not an isolated writer in a rose-covered cottage wrestling with words somewhere, but that does sound appealing at times. But to help create resources and interest and outreach all across the state for people to understand how important poetry is, whether they think they like poetry or not.
And you mentioned wannabe poets. Do you get the impression that there are a lot of wannabe poets out there?
Oh, I'm sure there are. people who write and are prolific writers, but are not quite ready to share their words with others. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we can open the door for them as well.
Now, you received a call from Governor Walz last month to tell you that you were selected. What was that moment like?
anybody who knows me knows that I always have something to say. but that phone call, I was pretty close to speechless. And I think most of my words were monosyllabic, and I managed to wrench out, "Thank you very much. It's an honor, and I'm excited to be in the role."
I can imagine that. Yeah. So, Gwen, I know you studied chemistry in college. So how did you become a writer?
I've always loved words and reading, and I can remember sitting in the back seat of the car when my mother was driving, and I was too small to see over the back seat or out the windows, and I asked her how she could tell the songs on the radio apart, because they all sounded the same to me, and she told me, "You have to listen to the words." Mm. So that was my introduction to the relationship between words and music. And I've always been a storyteller, and it's been there. It's not that far from chemistry and physics and calculus. It takes elements and put them together to create something new and fabulous. So it's same with quilting. So they're all related to me.
I love that. New and fabulous. That's how I'm trying to live too. I like that, Gwen. That should be a new poem. New and fabulous. Let's work on that together.
Okay, I'll write the title down. New and fabulous.
You often write about land and place. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Wichita, Kansas. And my parents met at Haskell Indian Institute. And my father was from South Dakota and my mother was from Oklahoma. So Kansas was my place of recognition of the land. I remember walking in wheat fields when the wheat was taller than me. I think the wheat in Kansas is a different variety that's taller than up here in Minnesota, or else it's changed over the years, or I was really, really short.
You were small.
And laying on the ground and watching the clouds in the sky. I love the Flint Hills. And it wasn't until I came to Minnesota that I realized that those rolling hills, just beautiful landscape, extends from northern Oklahoma all the way into Manitoba.
Mm-hmm. Now, when did you move to Mankato?
In 1991. And it was kind of a fluke. The only thing I knew about Mankato was from the TV show Little House on the Prairie. And that's where Ma and Pa Ingalls went when they wanted to get away from the kids. But I came here to take a position as an assistant professor at then Mankato State University, and didn't know that I would stay here, and didn't know that it was the homeland of my father's people either. But it's a powerful place for me.
Now, you have said before many times that Mankato is where you're supposed to be.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
When I came here, I didn't know anything about the history of this place because it wasn't something that was talked about in my family until I moved here. And my father and my Uncle Floyd, both in separate conversations, told me that they would see how long I would last here because this wasn't a good place for Indians. And it wasn't too long after that I had my introduction to the history of this place through the December 26th run from Fort Snelling to Mankato. And the land claimed me. I finally felt like I was at home. Growing up in Kansas, I always wondered why I was there and why I had the family that I had and why couldn't I be the child of somebody famous. But coming here to Minnesota via Kansas City, it felt like home.
When we look at the history of Mankato, we know that that is where 48 Dakota men were executed by the U.S. government following the Dakota War of 1852. What has it been like for you to live and work in a city that has such a history for Dakota people?
Those 38 men who were hanged that day in 1862 were fathers and uncles and brothers and nephews and grandsons. And it was a difficult history to hear. I have a Dakota cousin who grew up in western South Dakota, and she had the same experience. Nobody talked about that history until she moved to the Minneapolis area. And the fact that I am here and that I tell the history of our people, and I live in a place where I'm not very far from the ancestral villages of three of my great-great-great-grandfathers, says to me that this is where I'm supposed to be. If I hadn't moved here, there would be no Minnesota Makoche, the land of the Dakota. I feel very much at home here, and there are so many strong connections to our people, to my ancestors, that it helps me reinforce the stories that I have to tell.
Well, I would love to have you read something for us. We're talking to Minnesota's new poet laureate, Gwen Westerman. Got the phone call in September from the governor, and she's just the third poet laureate we've had here in our state, but our first Native person to hold that position. Gwen, I believe you have something ready for us to read, something that was published this past July by the Academy of American Poets, Poem A Day Project. It's called Giveaway Song. Could you read that for us?
Sure. Giveaway song. This is my giveaway. Not because I don't want it anymore. Not because it's out of style or broken or useless since it lost its lid or one of its buttons. Not because I don't understand the value of things. This is my giveaway. Because I have enough to share with you, because I have been given so much health, love, happiness, pain, sorrow, fear, to share from the heart in a world where words can be meaningless when they come only from the head. This is my giveaway. To touch what is good in you with words your heart can hear, like ripples from a pebble dropped in water, moving outward, growing wider, touching others. You are strong. You are kind. You are beautiful. This is my giveaway. Wopidaye, wopidaye, wopidaye.
Gwen, what is the inspiration for the giveaway song?
I do a lot of research in archives for historical records and documentation of our Dakota people, of our Native people in general. And when I was in the archives, National Archives at Kansas City, I came across a letter about my father's mother. And she was pregnant and kind of stranded in Granite Falls at the Upper Sioux community. And she had contacted the Indian agent for money to get back home to Sisseton. And the agent wrote to somebody else, and that person said, this woman never values anything we give her, and if we give her money, she'll just give it away to someone else. So no, do not give her the funds to travel back to her home, even though she's pregnant. And I sat with that letter for a long time, and that's been probably 12 or 13 years ago that I found that letter, but it addresses that general notion by outsiders that Native people, tribal peoples, I think, don't understand the value of what's given to them because they share. They share what they have with others, and that's more important than accumulation of goods. So there was a long incubation period for this particular poem, and I think it reaches a lot of people in a lot of different ways. So I'm really grateful mm-hmm. to the Poetry Foundation for publishing that in July.
It's beautiful. I want to give our listeners an opportunity to talk with you, Gwen. We're talking to Minnesota's Poet Laureate Gwen Westerman and taking your phone calls. The number is 651-227-6000. We want to hear from you. Are you a poet, a quilter, as Gwen is also a quilter? How does your heritage factor into your creative work? And what would you like to ask Gwen Westerman? Let's take a phone call. Call us at 651-227-6000. That's the number. Or 800-242-2828 in St. Paul. Kristen is on the line waiting patiently. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Certainly.
My family was a part of the Sisseton Wahpeton Sioux tribe in South Dakota, so I'm very excited to be talking to you, Gwen. Thank you. But they've since removed themselves from the tribe and the culture entirely before I was born. And, you know, like many people, I didn't know anything about Native American history, let alone my own ties, until I left home and started college. And I've wanted so badly to reconnect with that part of my heritage and incorporate it into my life and especially my craft and leatherworking. But I don't know where to start. Do you have any advice or resources for someone who wants to reconnect and put intention into their artwork that honors Indigenous culture?
Kristen in St. Paul, they're looking for some advice, Gwen.
I think there are a lot of resources and a lot of connections out there for people who have been disconnected in whatever way from their heritage and their culture. And the fact that you know that your family came from Houston is really important. There are, I hate to brag about my own work, but Minnesota Makoche, the land of the Dakota, that I co-wrote with Bruce White and is published by the Minnesota Historical Society, provides a really good history of how our peoples were spread across this region and how they were affected by land loss and how the communities became separated almost from each other. And Sisseton is at Lake Traverse and close to Big Stone Lake and the source of the Mississippi or Minnesota River. And then our Dakota communities are all along the Minnesota River. But there are great opportunities if you're in the metro area for Dakota language learning, for community tables, and also contact the tribe. Tell them who your family is and see if they can help you connect more with your family history and maybe find some more relatives. Who knows? We might be related.
All right. Thank you. Let's take another phone call before we go to a news break in Mankato. Betty is on the phone. Betty, what did you want to ask our poet laureate here in Minnesota, Gwen Westerman?
I guess I have two points. And one is thank you very much, Gwen, for the piece you did, I think, back in the 150th marking of the hangings. So maybe that would have been 2012. Do you foresee, I think you helped us in Mankato understand what actually happened here. And I would love to see that rebroadcast. Is there anything planned to do that?
You're talking about the Little War on the Prairie from
yes.
This American Life piece?
Mm-hmm.
And that is available online. I think it often airs around that Thanksgiving, Christmas window, but it is available online through American Public Radio, so you can listen to it to your heart's content.
Gwen, you sometimes write in a form that's called Tonka. What is Tonka, and why do you like working in that form?
I actually found the Japanese form tonka when I was doing research on the word tonka, which in Dakota means big, and tonka bars, which are made of bison meat. And then up came tonka. It's a 31-syllable form of Japanese poetry, and most people are familiar with haiku, which is 17 syllables, but mm-hmm. tonkas are 31 and 5 lines. And I don't know if I'm staying true to the original form, but I appreciate that condensed language and that rigid format to help me write frequently. And right now I'm posting for October Poetry on Instagram, and every mm-hmm. day there's a photo and a tonka poem.
All right. I'm going to pause you there because we're going to take a news break. But on the other side of news, we're going to have you read one of your poems written in that tonka format on Instagram, which I think is really cool. We're talking with Minnesota's Poet Laureate Gwen Westerman, and also talking with you, our listeners. The phone lines are open. Are you a poet? Are you a quilter, as Gwen is? We'll talk about her quilting abilities as well. What would you like to ask our new poet laureate here in Minnesota? You can call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Right now, we're going to talk to Phil Picardi to see what's going on in the news. Hi, Phil. Yes, that is 1A, next at 10 a.m. here on NPR News. Monday morning at 9, I'm talking about bad bosses. Yeah, you've heard about the great resignation because of the pandemic, but some people are quitting because of a bad boss, and that is costing all of us. So Monday morning at 9, Michelle Singletary, who's a columnist at the Washington Post, and Chris Farrell, our senior economics contributor, we're going to talk about what it means to individuals, organizations, and the economy when managers are counterproductive. Bad bosses, Monday morning at 9. Join us for the conversation. On the podcast right now, a lot of people are still listening to the conversation I had with essential workers about how they are holding up during the prolonged pandemic. We heard some heartbreaking and inspiring stories from a school bus driver, a hospital worker who cleans patients' rooms, and a union representative who is in frequent talks with workers at a long-term care facility. Check it out on the podcast. Just download the podcast for NPR News with Angela Davis, and you can listen whenever it's convenient for you.
Programming is supported by the Shakopee Mittawakaton Sioux Community, a sovereign tribal nation in Scott County, now hiring. Learn more about the tribe at ShakopeeDakota.org and at its public exhibit in Shakopee.
Now back to the conversation with Minnesota's Poet Laureate Gwen Westerman. She's an English professor and professor of humanities at Minnesota State University, Mankato. The phone lines are open. What would you like to ask her? And are you an artist? How do you create or express your culture and place that's important to you in your work? You can call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Tweet me at Angela Davis, MPR. Gwen, before the news break, we were talking about you dropping some fresh poetry on Instagram pretty frequently. And so let's talk about sharing poetry on Instagram. Is there one that you can share with us right now? Could you pick one and talk about it? And tell us about the photos that you're taking to match these poems.
Actually, I match the poem to the photos. and I live in rural southern Minnesota. I'm mm-hmm. surrounded by cornfields and soybean fields, and on two sides by the Maple River. So I spend a lot of time walking and taking pictures of sunrises and sunsets and deer in the field and just little details. And the last week I walked to the end of the driveway and there was a milkweed seed caught on a dried stalk of a plant. And so here's the poem I wrote about that single milkweed seed. When our dream seems blown off course by a single breath from some unknown time or place, its flight may be straight to even more fertile ground.
So when I read that and hear that, trying to figure out how that relates to my life, I think about, I guess, when you have storms in life, when things happen that dramatically change your world, the initial reaction may be panic, but in time you find out, oh, that actually helped me. I landed on solid ground. Is that what that means?
Right. We often think that when our dream is set in a specific direction, and we get thrown off course, that it might be the worst thing that's ever happened, but it also might be the thing that sets us on a new trajectory and we'll be even more involved, more creative than we had originally anticipated.
That's kind of how I landed here at NPR. I think my new nickname is going to be Milkweed Seed. I'm looking at my producers. They're nodding. Like, we'll call you Milkweed now, Angela. Okay. Thank you, Gwen. Let's take some more phone calls as we talk to Minnesota's Poet Laureate, Gwen Westerman, who now is sharing poetry written in Tanka form on Instagram. I love it. In Bloomington, Deb is on the phone. Deb, what did you want to share with Gwen or ask Gwen?
Well, first of all, congratulations on the Poet Laureate Award. It is very well deserved. I, too, am a published poet. I'm also a professor in the Minnesota state system.
Oh.
But I am from a different demographic. I'm a baby boomer, white and Scandinavian German background. I have deep roots, especially in my German side. And as the panoply of voices has opened up, and we are hearing from so many voices, new ones, often for the first time, I'm beginning to feel emotionally. Now, intellectually, I know this isn't true, but I feel emotionally like my voice is losing relevance. And who wants to hear about my experiences and my views on the world when there are so many others that are younger, that are fresher, that offer perspectives that are different from mine? Mm. So I am in the process of trying to redefine my place in this new chorus of voices.
Hmm. Deb, you're in your feelings, as the young folks would say. Gwen, what would you say to her?
I'm also a baby boomer. and I think that for Minnesotans, poetry holds the possibility for healing and change and elevating as many voices as possible of and for Minnesota. We all are seeing what we share as humans above and around and within the conflict and fear and hope and expectation. So there is room for as many voices as we can bring in. I think about Walt Whitman's poem about singing America and Langston Hughes, "I too sing America." And we sing Minnesota. And there's always a place to share and to talk about our connections to the land and our past and our future. And I think it's a chorus. And the more voices we have, the more beautiful the music is going to be.
I agree. We need to hear everyone's voice. Let's take another phone call in Bemidji. Hello, Bemidji. We've got Tyler calling in. Good morning, Tyler.
Hi, honey. Well, I see, Gwen. Just calling in this morning to let you know how inspirational your poetry is from a fellow South Dakota from the Rosebud Indian Sioux Tribe. I used to write poetry for a long time and recently stopped due to lack of motivation. And so to hear a fellow Native American win such a distinguished poet award and to hear you read with such compassion has really sparked a fire in me this morning to start picking up my pen and start to do my poetry again, especially moving to such beautiful Anishinaabe country. So just wanted to say palamia, and thank you for sharing your poetry with the world.
Oh, that's nice. Tyler in Bemidji. Gwen, he says you have lit a fire this morning.
That's good. You know, and the last year and a half, it's been really hard for me to write as well. And I think that's one of the reasons that I latched on so tightly to Tonka poetry, because it's small and it's concise, and I can and write in one sitting. So I'll write.
I wanted to ask you, you're teaching students there at in Mankato at Minnesota State University. What's it been like interacting with your students? You're an English professor, correct?
Right. I teach technical communication and literature and humanities. And we are on campus as much as we can be right now. I have one course. It's a graduate seminar that meets online once a week, but Monday and Wednesdays I have my Intro to Western Humanities class, and it's hard not to be able to see people's faces, fully see their faces, because there's so much we communicate when we can see someone smile. And the students have been really good about working together, you know, with space between them when we can. And I've always used a lot of collaboration in my teaching methods, and social distancing and masks has affected that some, but we find other ways to work together. I'm glad to be back in the classroom. I was on sabbatical last year, so that isolated me even more, and it's good to be on campus and see people again.
So what has made it hard for you to write? I mean, obviously the pandemic has changed, you know, all of our lives, but what has interrupted your focus and your ability to write?
Being isolated and not being able to travel. Zoom is great, but it's not the same as sitting across the table from someone and having a conversation, sharing food, sharing memories. And I didn't realize how much that isolation affected me until I came back to campus and realized what a slump I had been in. And I'm sure it has affected other people that way as well. Right. Some people can be very creative in difficult times. It was hard for me.
I want to make sure we spend time talking about your work as a quilter. You're also a fabric artist. You make beautiful quilts that have won awards, have been in art shows. And so tell us how you started with quilting.
My grandma was the quilter in our family, and she tried to teach me when I was about 10 years old, and she used scissors and a little cardboard template, and she cut each piece out one at a time, and she always used scraps of fabric from clothes. She didn't buy new fabric, but I sat there and I said, "But Grandma, if I fold this piece of fabric four times, I can cut out four at once." And I started trying to cut my little template with the four folds of fabric. And she took it away from me and said, "No, you have to cut them out one at a time or they'll never fit together." So that was the end of my lesson. And I didn't pick up scissors to make a quilt until I was 40.
Wow. Now, you are featured along with some other Minnesota quilters on a recent issue of this beautiful magazine, Quilt Folk. And there are some amazing photographs of your work. Tell me about the quilts that that show human hands.
In the summer of 2002, I sent my mom and my grandma a self-addressed stamped envelope and a piece of paper to trace their hands and put it in the envelope and send it back to me, because I had been trying for a couple of years to get them to do that on their own, and they didn't. And so I got my letters back with my grandma's hand,
and my mother's hand. And in the span of 4 months after that, they had both passed away. Mm. So I traced my hand and my children's hand and my granddaughter's hands in the time since then, and have been using them as connection. The one piece shows my grandma's hands in the below the surface of the land as the roots, and my mother's hand as the trunk, and mine and then my daughter's hands as the branches. But that idea of being able to literally touch the hands of the generations before has a lot of meaning for me. Hands play an important part in my work.
Some of the other images that seem to be important to you in your quilting, horses. Tell me why horses are important to you and why you enjoy that image and working with that.
I've always loved horses. Where I grew up in Wichita, the people who lived behind us had horses, and I would spend hours out there at the fence petting them and feeding them too many apples and telling them everything that I couldn't tell anyone else. But horses are a mode of transportation. They're a relative. They're part of our history as people in the plains. And they just appeal to me in some way as kindred spirits. So somewhere along the line, I must have, in another life, been a horse.
But they seem to represent something to you, right? There's a connection there.
Yes, they're strong and they're resilient and they're important. And they have a long, long history in this hemisphere.
And stars as well. I see stars as well in your quilts.
Yes. The Dakota people are called Wichangpeoyate, star people. And our creation stories tell us that our souls come from the stars to this place where we become people. And when we die, they go back across the Milky Way to where they came from. So when I saw the Pixar movie Soul not very long ago, I was just like, there it is, there it is. We know that we come from the stars. So constellations as sources of story, constellations as sources of navigation, and then just mystery. So that's why I like to use stars.
We're talking to Minnesota's poet laureate Gwen Westerman and taking phone calls. Let's go to Decorah, Iowa, where Mike is on the phone. And Mike, what did you want to ask or share with Gwen?
Good morning, Angela and Gwen. Hi. It's good to hear your voice again. I am so relieved that you revealed that Gwen is not just an outstanding poet, but also a marvelous quilter. She spoke to our Quilt Guild in Blue Earth and shared her beautiful quilts with her gentle presentation and powerful message. And I enjoyed her exhibit at the Hillstrom Gallery at Gustavus in St. Peter. Like you say, I remember her beautiful quilts with the stars and the sparkling beads. And Gwen, you are a treasure, and I'm glad people are discovering you.
Oh, that's really
Thank
nice.
You, so much,
you talked about quilts made revealing heritage as you do, and down here in Decorah, there's the Vesterheim Norwegian Museum, and I'd seen an old tapestry in a friend's home and recreated it as a quilt, and it's part of an exhibit that's called Socially Distanced, Creatively Connected, where all the folks who have been trying to be creative through the pandemic, as you were speaking about, Gwen, and this exhibit is all works that were created during the pandemic. So it speaks to exactly what you were talking about.
Thank you there. That's Mike in Decorah, Iowa. What is it like for you to get praise from fans, Gwen?
It means a lot. It's also very humbling to know that the things that I write, the things that I create, touch people in such a deep and meaningful way.
I want to share with you a written question from Matt, who writes this. For an adult who writes but would like to start writing poetry, where does he begin? He wants to know. What resources would you recommend, Gwen, for beginners?
Write what you love, and don't worry about form and rules. I think of poetry as an outlet for expression without judgment. It's a validation of self, and it's song. And I love to sing, and I love to write. And so just scribble it all out on a page or key it all into your tablet, and then come back and look at it again and find those images and words that stand out to you and work from there. I think too often we feel like something has to come out perfectly.
And that's not how the writing process works, right? It often doesn't work that way, right? All right. Well, our time is up for today, and I do want to say thank you and congratulations to our guest for the hour, Gwen Westerman, the Minnesota Poet Laureate. She is also a professor of English and Humanities at Minnesota State University in Mankato. Thank you, Gwen, and thank you to our listeners who called in and wrote in questions as well. This conversation today was produced by Maya Beckstrom. Be safe, everyone. We'll talk to you Monday morning at 9.
Support comes from Visit Brainerd, Minnesota's family vacation destination, where you'll fall in love with fall. You can explore Minnesota on Brainerd's trails, lakes, or golf courses and take in colors and wonders of nature. Visit Brainerd.com.
Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.